And good morning to everyone. I'll do some introductions for starters. Today the court is joined by two district court judges, Judge Karen Noakes from the 8th Judicial District, Judge Karen Noakes down on the left, excuse me, and Judge Terry Harder from Minden. Correct, and we want to thank them for being with us and welcome them to the court today. Our first argument is State v. Anthony L. Wells. Mr. Wilson, good morning to you.
Good morning. Good morning to the rest of you, Your Honors. Counsel for the State. Very pleased to be back. My name is Mike Wilson. I represent the appellant in this matter, Anthony Wells. We've raised several assignments of error in this case. I think most pressing among them, and maybe you'll agree, is this jury instruction, or a couple of jury instructions that were given to the jury in this case, and objected to, one of them in particular, instruction number 7. And before I really get into the content of those, as you know, the biggest distinction between first-degree murder, second-degree murder, is this concept of premeditation. And so we call it premeditated first-degree murder. Okay. Now, the hallmark of premeditation is forming the intent to kill before acting. All right. We can't assume the element of premeditation has been satisfied simply because intent has been established. There's that distinguishing factor of forming the intent before acting. If we lose that distinction between premeditation and intent, we essentially lose the distinction between first and second degree murder. So we have to protect that distinction. It's very important to how we try murder cases. Now, our biggest problem with these instructions, instruction number 3, which is the elements instruction, which was, by all accounts, correct, referring specifically to the person who died here, Joshua Hartwig, all right, and then contrasting that with instruction number 7, and instruction number 7 says, it delivers what we call a transferred intent instruction.
Right. What is the root of the transferred intent instruction?
What's at the root of the instruction?
Where does it come from?
Where does the transferred intent... Well, where did this one come from? That's a good question, Your Honor. Frankly, what I saw here was a very minimal body of case law on transferred intent in Nebraska in murder cases.
But we've recognized it.
We've recognized it. It does. We do recognize the doctrine of transferred intent. And it makes sense. I mean, I looked outside the state to try and find both the root of transferred intent just generally in other states, including Nebraska. What I found was really a dearth of case law on the use of transferred intent instructions specifically in premeditated first-degree murder cases. They're given. I know it's happened. I just didn't see a lot of case law on folks that had problems with their transferred intent instructions in these cases. And there's really only one case in Nebraska, Your Honor, if I'm going to kind of get to the heart of your question, which is how is this sort of developed in Nebraska? I have a hard time pronouncing this one. It's Iro Mwanya. That is a case of actually what was second-degree murder. And in that case, what we had was a transferred intent instruction that ultimately this court took a look at, found it was okay, but what they did was the instruction in that case stated, at least in part, you may infer but are not required to infer that a person intended a reasonably probable result of his or her act. This was, again, a second-degree murder case, okay? And then ultimately this court allowed it, and it said, Another instruction informed the jury of the doctrine of transferred intent, specifically stated that if it found that the defendant intended to kill not the person who died, but this other person that was wounded in that case, the element of, his name was Nolan Jenkins, the element of intent was satisfied as to the person who died, a young lady by the name of Miss Cooper, even if the defendant did not intend to kill her. Okay, so that's sort of the best background I can find for our case here. Now our case, and the biggest problem we have with the instruction in our case, is that essentially instruction number 7 does not speak to the element of premeditation or malice. It only speaks to the element of intent to kill somebody in this group of folks that my client allegedly shot at.
If we take that statement as accurate, which I think is accurate, and we relate it back to instruction number 3 and the elements, doesn't instruction 7 relate solely to element 2 of the first degree murder elements that were identified, and that is the one that Anthony Wells did so purposely?
I tend to agree with you, yes. Now here's the problem though, okay? This jury, and there's a question that the jury submitted, I'm sure you're all aware, the jury submitted a question that really, I think, illustrates the point that we're trying to make, that the jury was evaluating this, or the court should assume that the jury was evaluating this from a transferred intent, as a transferred intent scenario, okay? Now, if you relate back to the elements instruction, the elements instruction speaks only to the victim Joshua Hartwig. The elements instruction is very specific. It only speaks to Joshua Hartwig as the victim. All right? So element number 3 in that instruction is that the jury needed to find beyond a reasonable doubt that my client premeditated his intentional act of killing Joshua Hartwig. When we get to instruction number 7,
well,
that's gone.
That's not exactly what element 3 says. It says that Anthony Wells did so with deliberate and premeditated malice. It doesn't mention the victim. I mean, you've added the victim as gloss to the element, and I'm not sure that...
Okay, I see what you're saying. Now, I'm just going to pull the instruction out. I got it right here.
Okay.
Because I knew this might come up. Okay. Instruction number 3. It's got at least 4 elements.
Correct.
The first element says that Anthony Wills killed Joshua Hartwig.
Okay.
And number 2, Anthony Wells did so. In other words, referring back to killing Joshua Hartwig.
So your argument is that
did so in
3 relates to the Hartwig.
You got it. That's my argument, Judge. And
okay.
And I think that, and then when you look at 3, it says did so again. And I think that's referring back to the first element in that instruction number 3.
Okay.
So that's where I'm going with that. And
okay.
So then when we get to 7, that's gone. It's disappeared. We have no more premeditation toward anyone. Really.
Excuse me.
That's okay. And so what we have there is we have simply an instruction to the jury that intent is satisfied. Now, there's one other instruction that's not really talked about in my brief that I kind of want to mention today. As I was thinking about this some more, this is one of those issues that just sort of crystallizes as you're taking a shower or something and you're like washing your hands, like, oh wait, there is another instruction on this. It's instruction number 11. It mentions intent. And this isn't in my briefing, but I wanted to bring this up. Instruction number 11 reads, in deciding whether Anthony, it goes toward, this is just that same generic instruction about, you know, the jury needs to consider all the words and acts surrounding circumstances when determining what's the defendant's frame of mind.
It's the standard NJI second intent.
You got it. Part of that instruction said, the first part of that instruction is in deciding whether Anthony Wells acted with intent. Then there's a parenthetical. It says, in other words, i.e., purpose, knowledge, willfulness, premeditation, deliberation. It essentially, this instruction is telling the jury that premeditation is subsumed within intent.
You don't see that as a list.
I see it as
a list of elements.
Almost like a definition. Intent can be a list. Well, intent has its own definition that's within the instructions as well.
And then you have to go back to 7, which is also regarding intent.
Right. But my point would be if you look at instruction, let's see, instruction number 10, which is our definitions instruction, intentionally means purposely and voluntarily, not accidentally. Purposely relates back to element 2. Was so everything's directing everybody back to element 2.
Was instruction 11 objected?
No, it wasn't objected. Like you said, it's a standard instruction. But even though it wasn't objected to, I'm just arguing that you have to read the instructions as a whole. And when you read them as a whole, you're getting two different stories about what are the elements that we need to find in order for Mr. Wells to be guilty of premeditated first-degree murder.
So what is your objection to 7 in particular?
Okay, so if I have to sort of put it in, you know, it's in my brief, obviously, but in plain English instead of all the wordiness of my briefs, and I do apologize, my briefs can get wordy. It suggests or eliminates, it eliminates the element of premeditation. I think if the jury looks at instruction number 7 and says, okay, we have a transferred intent scenario here. All of a sudden, intent is relegated to the intent to kill somebody in the group, but there's nothing whatsoever directing the jury to find that that intent to kill was preceded by some premeditation.
But number 7 is a, dare I say, a conventional bad aim instruction. If you look at other states, and we don't have a lot on this.
Right.
Is there a way this instruction could have been written better or correctly from your viewpoint?
Yes.
With this factual situation?
I think so, Judge.
How would that be?
All right. So I mentioned that there's a case called Gutierrez here in Nebraska that was actually a first-degree murder case, and unfortunately, the court didn't have a complete enough record, apparently, to really address the question in that case. I think
we didn't have a record that showed all the instructions, so we couldn't give it a context.
Right. I think this time that's been rectified. I think you have all the instructions this time, so I'm glad you're going to be able to address it this time. That case spoke to the crime as a whole. In other words, it said that if you find the intent was to kill somebody in the group of people you shot at, then you can transfer it to the actual victims, the intent to kill, and the crime is the same. In a way that sort of refers the jury, I like that better at least. I don't like it as much as what I'm about to propose, but I like it better because it seems to refer the jury back to the elements instruction and say, okay, these are the elements, this is what you're supposed to find. Now, again, we didn't have all the instructions, so it's kind of hard for me to say exactly what the elements instruction did there. I'd prefer it say something more like, with respect to the charge in count 1, if you find that Anthony Wells intended to kill a specific person and by mistake or accident killed Joshua Hartwig, okay, actually, let me back up. If you find that Anthony Wells intended to kill a specific person and premeditated that killing, or that enacted with deliberate and premeditated malice. So in other words, you've got to get that element into this instruction somehow.
But if this is with respect to intent, it doesn't necessarily follow you. I ought to load it up with more information about other elements.
Right.
But that would be your preference.
That would be my argument, that would be less confusing.
That instruction was not requested.
No, the instruction number 7 was objected to, and then the court, or excuse me, trial counsel started just to take a few steps down the path of what we're doing here on appeal, and the judge said, nope, I'm giving this instruction. It didn't really get fleshed out. The judge didn't ask for a revised instruction or an alternative instruction. Trial counsel probably could have offered one, yeah. It would have been nice. But
trial counsel had the opportunity to request instructions.
It was an instructions conference, and yeah, he could have spoken up. I wish he had.
Going back to the Chief Justice's initial question,
mm-hmm.
are we in agreement that within Nebraska, essentially, we have a common law transferred intent jurisprudence rather than a statutory basis?
I agree with that statement. I didn't see anything in the statutes on it, obviously, but...
Well, let me give you a compare and contrast, because I think this does matter.
Yes.
In New York, the murder first degree statute reads, with intent to cause the death of another person, he causes the death of such person or a third person. There's your bad aim case.
Right. Yeah,
and
right.
So some of the cases that you and the court have looked at really need go no further than the statute. So we're now, I think, looking at the common law jurisprudence in this area.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's other statutes.
I wouldn't argue that point with you at all.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. I think that...
So that's where we all need to refine our thinking.
I think
in common law.
I think so, Your Honor. I think you've got it narrowed down.
The instruction that you sort of proposed today seemed to anticipate premeditation to murder a specific person. Would that be inapplicable to the fact situation here where there appears to be a group of people?
That's why we... I think that it's applicable when you have a group of people, and as you would in this scenario, because it could be a specific person or it could be specific people. And perhaps maybe this instruction should have said to kill a specific person or people.
Or anyone I can hit in a group of people?
Possibly, yeah. Because, again, you can't premeditate. You can't form the intent to kill a specific person or people without having the specific person or people.
But the specific could be a universe of defined as a group.
Could be.
Rather than a specific individual.
Could be. But here, we don't know whether the jury ultimately concluded that my client premeditated an intentional killing of Joshua Hartwig. We don't know for sure. Or whether it did apply the transferred intent scenario.
But what do the facts support? That the defendant was shooting at a group, and our victim was within the group. Is that a fair statement of the facts?
That's a fair statement of the facts at the time of the shooting. However, the facts also show that the victim was not present at the time of the incident that basically provided the motive, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
He was not there.
Right. There doesn't seem to be a dispute, right, that he came out later.
Yeah, that's not really in dispute from
what
I can tell.
But at the time of the crime, the victim's in the group.
At the time of the crime, the victim's in the group, yes.
So that's what we're trying to refine.
Right. And
a communal intent.
Yeah. You're going to have your work cut out for you on this one, Your Honors, because hasn't been really worked on in Nebraska. And I do want to save a couple minutes because it's such an interesting issue, and I want to hear what the state has to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Faust, good morning to you.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Stacey Faust, Assistant Attorney General representing the Appalachian State of the State of Nebraska. In preparation for today, I kept coming back to the same question that I did when I briefed this issue, and it was, how would I read this transferred intent instruction as a juror? Not as a lawyer, not trying to parse every word for every hidden meaning, but as a juror with no legal knowledge. And I came to the same conclusion as I did when I briefed this. Read with the rest of the instructions, this transferred intent instruction was not misleading, It was not confusing. The whole purpose of the transferred intent doctrine is to impose criminal liability when the only element missing or not met is that the actual victim differs from the intended victim. And I think the jurors got that.
So what do you make of the juror question? Were they like confused or were they zeroing in?
I think they were zeroing in on the intent part. You know that because they specify if he goes there to intimidate, or they say intimidate, knowing that there is the potential for hurting or killing someone, but does it anyway, and they insert with malice. It tells me they're not disregarding the material elements instruction. They know
but,
that.
But Mr. Wilson says that that juror question shows they're confused.
No, I don't think they were confused. I think they're going through the elements, and they're not hung up on the malice part. They are coming to terms with the purposely part. And most importantly, I think it shows us that they are following the material elements instruction. When reading the transferred intent instruction, they weren't confused. They went back to the material elements, and they're applying all of them. And they convicted him of first-degree murder.
Let me ask this in a little bit different way. I think Mr. Wilson's argument is that premeditation is sort of written out of the picture because of jury instruction number 7. How do you respond to that?
Do I agree that it could have been written better? Yes. But I think if I'm a juror reading that, and I've read it with all the rest of the instructions, including the material elements instruction, all that says to me is, okay, well, I know he meant to kill, say, George Winters, who was one of the residents, but he actually killed Joshua Hardwick. All the transfer intent instruction is telling me is he's still guilty. First-degree murder. We're just swapping victims. That's all we're doing. And that's how I read that as a juror, applying that. I don't think the jurors read the premeditation out of it. When reading it with the material elements instruction, they were still following it and they still applied it.
I think Mr. Wilson's concern is, with respect to the with premeditation, that it may have altered the burden on the state.
But it didn't, because the material, they're still instructed on the material elements as to Joshua Hardwick. And you can tell that they did not believe the state, that they removed the burden from the state on that element, specifically from the jury question. And if they did, assuming we read it as Mr. Wilson says we should, jury should have convicted him of second-degree murder, and they didn't. If they would have applied the transferred intent instruction, as he says they would have read it, they would have convicted him of second-degree murder.
We've talked a little bit about how the instruction could have been written better. Do you have any opinions on that?
I agree with opposing counsel on the Gutierrez part. I think it needs to be, it should be as general as possible as it was in that case. As Justice Miller-Lerman pointed out, I don't think we're not adding premeditation and deliberate malice to it. This is a transferred intent instruction. I think to get back to the common law, this legal fallacy of the transferred intent doctrine, we need to just be as general as possible and tell the jurors, all you're doing is swapping out the intended victim for the actual victim.
How do we reconcile the transferred intent concept, including the instruction, with the rule that we've often stated that all crimes in Nebraska are statutory?
I think you reconcile it because this isn't defining the crime itself. We have all kinds of jury instructions that don't stem from statutory, and this isn't the crime itself. This is really just going to a collateral issue almost.
Unlike New York's statute, our statute for first-degree murder doesn't speak about a third person.
It says another person.
Another.
Yes. I'll reiterate again, as I'm reading all these instructions together as we are supposed to do, there's no way that the jury is going to read these together.
Let me ask you another question. What about the issue of, as Justice Miller Lerman referred to it, as a communal person, if you will, or a communal group, as the intended victim or target? How do we handle that with an instruction?
You mean in the transferred intent instruction, what would you say rather than a specific person?
Yes.
I don't know why the specific person language wouldn't work in that situation. I mean, you take the evidence, we know here that they
would the state have the burden of, for example, in this case, identifying who the specific intended target was?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think you could do that.
I don't think you could, and I don't think it would be fair to put the burden on the state, because then that's relieving what the defendants who do these mass shootings in crowds of people. I don't think that's not the burden on a fair burden to put on the state when there were multiple targets. I think that just saying a specific person and let the evidence speak for itself and the jurors to weigh that evidence and come to whether or not that is met based on the evidence, that's up to the jurors. If the state needs to put on that there was targets, evidence of targets, but I don't
think that the victim is within the target.
Exactly, but I don't think that they need to say the theory of our case is that one specific person in, say, these, I think, six people, eight people.
Does that go to instruction number 3 then, where it says I intentionally killed Joshua Hart, and then that I intend to kill a person purposely with premeditated malice? We get into it in that. Is that the better place to put this?
To put the another person?
Any person. Another person.
I think that's where they put Joshua Hardwick in there because he's the one that was killed.
Obviously. Right.
But that's where the transferred intent instruction comes in, right? So that's why, that's how it's covered.
If I intend to kill anyone, that's really the element.
Yeah.
It's I intended to kill
another person.
A specific person.
Right.
I intended to kill whoever was in there.
Correct.
Just in the school, vice versa.
Correct.
As part of our investigation here in the jurisprudence of which we have very little in this state is the Tennessee statute in which the court found transferred intent was acceptable in the first degree. And the Tennessee statute is the state has to prove that the defendant intended to kill a person.
Doctrine in Nebraska. I'm not arguing that it couldn't have been applied in this case. I'm merely arguing that in how it was instructed in this case, it was instructed in such a way that the jury lost sight of the essential element of premeditation. That is what I'm getting at, and the only instruction to the jury on the element of premeditation was that the premeditation had to be toward Mr. Hartwig, Joshua Hartwig. So that's the elements instruction, and then they get to number 7, and again, I think the jury instruction helps us, the jury question helps us, because I believe it shows that the jury was looking at this through the lens of a transferred intent analysis.
Are you telling us there was no definition of premeditation in the instructions?
There was a definition of premeditation.
All right.
It was in instruction number 10. And I'm not arguing the definition wasn't there, but what I'm arguing is that when they get to 7, suddenly the element disappears. Because when they go, if they try to read them together, and element number 3 is only as to Joshua Hartwig. So
if help us with your burden-shifting argument a little bit.
That's alleviating the state's burden of proving premeditation as to somebody, at least one person, perhaps more, in that group of people that my client allegedly shot at. That's sort of the crux. I'm trying to get to the crux. That's the crux. And if we do that, if we take those two elements, specifically premeditation, and we don't hold the jury to those elements, even in a transferred intent scenario, then again, we lose that distinction between first and second degree murder. Since my red light's blinking, I'll just sit down unless there's anything further, Your Honors.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Our next case.